Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Real Happy Hour podcast live. My name is Ola, and today we just screened the Book of Clarence. We've got an amazing set of panelists here with us, and I'm going to start calling them onto the stage. The very first person is Oliver Alvin Wilson. Come on, guys. Amazing. Amazing. Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, guys, we've got another special guest. Now, this time, I need you guys to really, really scream and just like be really happy to see him here, okay? Okay? All right, guys. Joining us on stage is the director of the Book of Clarence, Mr. James Samuel. And we have another guest joining us. She was in the movie. She played the role of Jezebel. Her name is Hopi Grace. Hopi, please join us. Amazing. Now let's start the show, guys. Amazing. Thank you all so much for making the time to come. Obviously, this is a surprise that Mr. James Samuel is here. So thank you very much for...
Pleasure's mine, brother.
And Hopi, thank you.
I was on Instagram and I saw you guys like posting something like last week, and I didn't know if I was going to be here. I'm here for a couple more days. And I was like, oh, if I'm here, I'm actually going to roll to that thing. Because
yeah, amazing. Right? Yes. We love it. Come on, guys. Usually, when I start this panel conversation, I ask, what do you think about the movie? But I can't really ask you that because this is your movie.
Yes, you can.
Okay, I will ask you that. Okay, Oliver, what do you think about the movie?
I thought it was inspiring. I'm still quite kind of moved by it, really. I thought it was really authentic, original, got a lot of heart to it. A lot of fun, a lot of joy.
Thank you, my bro.
A lot of kind of excellence, black excellence, but just excellence in general. I love the kind of taking it, really inspiring to see, and what amazing kind of way to inspire other young people as well, to see those images on screen, to see themselves like that, is really important.
Thank you, Oliver.
Really, really important.
Thank you, man.
So, James, what do you think about the movie?
I think the movie is amazing, personally. You know, it's a crazy thing, you know, through the whole promotional campaign, right? And even with my first movie, The Harder They Fall, the Western movie, you know, when I look at directors, only a few directors are kind of excitable, right? Just in history, when you like, if you see George Lucas speak, he's kind of calm and almost like he doesn't. But then if you look at, you know, Spike Lee, Quentin, when those guys came along, they were, the reason why they were like awe-inspiring at that time is because they spoke like the everyman, right? They spoke like the everyman, and it's almost politically incorrect to make something and say say this film's awesome. You never hear a director come out and say, oh man, this film is wicked.
You have to be humble.
But, yeah, like I'm not going to be humble to make other people feel comfortable. Like, that's a wicked film. It's the first movie of its kind in 136 years of the moving image, right? We've never seen a Hollywood movie where Jesus is black, right? You've never seen a Hollywood movie where you see these people in that place and time. So for me, it was like a really, I'll conclude by saying, when there's a red carpet, all the actors, usually, more often than not, they'll do the red carpet, right? They'll walk the red carpet, and they won't stay and watch the movie. They'll leave. Me and Lakeith must have watched this movie like 20 times. Like, every time we're on the red carpet, we just go in the theater and we stay. Like, oh, man, this is a night over Egypt. Dun, 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 dun. Even when I was shooting it, the film, every single day, I was like, wow, man, we're actually shooting this thing, something that lived in my brain for so long. You'll never think you'll see it. You know what I mean? So it's an amazing thing.
Helpy, what do you think about the movie?
I think it's brilliant. It's one of a kind, you know, and to work on that kind of a set, there's no other experience like it. There's so much joy when they're turning the cameras around. He's playing music into the hills of Italy. Yeah, just levity and joy in it. It makes a space where you can create really good work. Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree. It's a really beautiful movie, and the representation is so... We've never seen anything like this before. So having to watch this... And it's just amazing. And so usually on our conversations, we talk about the dynamics of characters and we break it down. And I would like to highlight characters and their relationships, and we can just sort of dive into them and what we thought about them. And I'd like to start with Clarence and his brother Thomas. So what did you think about the dynamic of their relationship?
I thought it was really interesting to see two different brothers, black men, kind of navigating the world and society in different ways and the complexities. I think you could both see both of their arguments, which is good. I think it was balanced, actually, and it's complex. And how do you navigate with your political, spiritual beliefs on what's the right thing to do? Stay at home, move on. The bad brother, is that the bad thing? Is that the moral thing? And I think that was great. It was balanced, and you can see, well, I definitely saw myself flipping at different points, and I think that's rounded. Yeah. So I thought it was a really interesting conversation to have, and I love the fact that you know, his twin brother was there towards the end, and you didn't have to say a lot sometimes. Like, what was he thinking? What was behind his eyes? So I love that conversation. And then of course his mother, some of those lines will haunt me, in terms of, you know, they always taking
our babies,
you know, and come back to me. So yeah, that was really strong, really powerful.
Yeah,
for sure. For me, you know, it was important that, you know, a lot of people, we all grew up on the Bible, right? But just hearing stories, and we all grew up with the same information in this society. But they leave a lot of the details out. Like Thomas himself was a twin. Right, his name wasn't actually Thomas, right? Thomas Didymus, and it means twin. So he was just referred to as twin. But the Bible never speaks about his twin, whether it's a twin brother or twin sister. Never speaks about his twin. So I would think to myself, what would that be like, right? We have to remember that Jesus had 12 disciples. He didn't have 7 billion, right? He had 12 disciples. The rest of the people were saying that this man is not real. He's crazy. If a guy came today and said, I'm Jesus, I'm back, this guy would be laughed off the internet. He'll be on the internet first and he'll be laughed off. So for me, I was like, okay, imagine being in that space and time and you're the twin, right? The Bible ignores you, let alone... So your twin goes off with this guy who's the Messiah. He's only got 12 men. What would that be like for talk about peer pressure, like what would that be like for that guy? And who would you, if you were around those days, who would you kind of relate to more? Until you hear Jesus speak, you will just hear about this guy saying that's why he was killed, right? Mm-hmm. Saying he's the savior of, and so I really wanted to study that and put like a pin in it, like Judas. You always hear about what Judas did. Judas is a description. Judas is an adjective almost. But you never hear about who Judas was. Ever. He was one of the disciples. I wouldn't have been one of the disciples. Jesus would have looked at my background and told me to kick rocks. But Judas was chosen as one of the disciples. So it's interesting for me to dive into that and explore kind of that relationship and that character. I thought Lakeith done an amazing job as both of them. Quick sidebar. One day we were filming, because you know Lakeith, he's there all the time, and he was looking, he was at Tiana Taylor's house, and Lakeith thought, you're gonna get these ones. Like Lakeith thought he had a day off the next day, and he was like, oh wicked, I got a day off. I'm gonna go see the sights. I'll probably zoom into Rome and come back. And I looked at him like, you don't have a day off tomorrow. I do, Clarence ain't working tomorrow. I was like, but Thomas. He's working. He was like, oh, I hate that guy. He really hated Thomas. They're like two different people.
Yeah. That's interesting, because one thing I noticed was, because obviously they're twins, and Clarence would always, it was a bit like damaging mentally for Clarence, the way I received it. Like, he's looking at someone who's a reflection of him, that sees him in a lower capacity. Like, he just doesn't rate Clarence at all. And so he goes through like the first, second half of that movie, just sort of questioning like what he's doing, because he just doesn't have any self-worth, because his brother, absolutely, who's his mirror image, is telling him, this is, you're just worthless.
And so, absolutely. Jay-Z always said, what captured him in this in a script was that for him, Clarence would have been a believer and a follower of Christ if his brother did not leave his family and just left him looking after his mum. You know, like you rebel against something even more. And everyone that heard about Jesus at that time, some people would meet it with intrigue and go and listen to him speak. Other people would look at him with pure scorn, and it was more scorn than not. You know what I mean? Mm. So imagine if how Clarence would have been if his brother never ran off and left him with his mother. And then you look at it and you just be objective for a minute and you think about what's wrong or right. You know, history romanticizes everything. If Jesus did exist, who would we have been at that time? Hearing about this guy that says he's the savior and the son of God and my mom was a virgin. You know, like think about who you would have been at that time. You know what I mean? So it's a really interesting thing to explore. You never really get the other side of it.
Yeah. Harvey, what did you think about like the relationship Clarence and Thomas and how that affected the whole story?
I think they've got a really nice chemistry. And also in The Harder They Fall. Excuse me. Also really good, and that really, you know, carried across to this film. Mm-hmm. It's a real brotherhood.
It's interesting how like we obviously Thomas and Clarence are the twins, but RJ and Clarence, Elijah, I believe that was his name. Yes. They're the only sort of representation of brotherhood that we can see.
Yes.
And you know, all the way through the movie, Elijah and Clarence are just like rolling together. And I felt like maybe it's in my head, perhaps you can point it out. Like, there were some movies that I felt like you were referencing. Like, for the longest time through the movie, I kept thinking, Clarence reminds me of Bad Boy, like Jody in Bad Boy. Like, he's like trying to figure himself out. Like, just get out of the house and go make something of your life. Yeah. I kept thinking about that. There were other things too, like also the fact that all through the movie, it felt like every time we're in Clarence's state of mind with his eyes and going into whatever he was experiencing, it was like a music video. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, we're watching the movie and all of a sudden, this is a music video and we're in his intimate mind. And I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think all our lives, especially when you're born, it's like music is a huge part of what I do, right? I compose the score as I'm writing the script, and it's all kind of like the same thing. And then the songs come. Some songs come earlier before the script, and other songs come while I'm doing it. But as I'm writing the script, I'm listening to the dialogue, and I find the melodies in the dialogue. So by the time I've finished, everything has its own kind of melody. But music is a huge part of all of our lives. But when you leave here today, if you take an Uber home, there'll be like at least four songs playing on the radio for you, your destination. If you're walking down the street, you're from the buses moving past, from the stores you walk past, music is a huge part of what we do, and kind of, and film in general kind of leaves that alone. But for me, I dig right into it, and I kind of rest each character in their own melody. And Clarence's whole life is musical. He's just one of those guys. We know those guys in the hood. I mean, that was me, right? The whole lives is you see kind of everything in melody. You know what I mean? When you hear that joint come on that you like, and then you think of that girl that you dig at school, and you know what I mean? It's a whole thing.
So were there any standout moments in the film? Like I would say mine, which is somewhat close to the end, when Barabbas was running, and I kept thinking of Boys in the Hood, like, turn left. Yeah. That's what I kept thinking, turn left, just turn. And he just kept running down a straight line. Yeah. So what moments in the movie did you like?
Definitely everyone dancing and the music kicking in. Just brought me back to my family. To see that on screen, it was so authentic. It was so like, people appreciate it, but I loved that. I loved how that transitioned. And I love some of the more kind of surreal moments. So when we had the spear, the spear's going for the guy and he's like starting to pull him out, and you challenge the audience, you challenge people watching, like, what am I watching right now? And it always kind of makes sense, and you kind of push it to a limit. And then I love how then, before you know it, you have that amazing speech about us and the people and the fight and the struggle, and like, you're emotionally disabled, and then you really hook them. So I love that. I love how you really like challenge, like, what am I watching? And then it really made sense. And so that's why I wanted to also ask is just the kind of the nature and the form. You play with the form a lot, which I thought was really, really interesting. And then, of course, again, just the final kind of 15 minutes and the mother. I can't get the mother out of my head. And the symbolism.
Yeah.
And just really hitting home how important that is to see. In all your life, you've been kind of conditioned to see one image and to see yourself, or just to open your imagination to the possibility of the stories that you've been told. It's just really important to see. And sometimes you might see that in a documentary, or you might read it in a book, or you might be following people that are unearthing that knowledge. But to see it in the cinema, it's like fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. So
is there any favorite scene of yours, maybe that you shot or you just love watching over and over again? I'll say another one just before jumping in. Every scene with Clarence and Didi, Anna Diop's character.
Yeah, Anna
Diop.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this is like a little Disney scene that we're watching right here. It's so lovely, and we're probably referencing some like classical Black Hollywood movies, like maybe the one with Jada Pinkett Smith and I can't remember. Anyway, we'll move on from that. That was a scene
Jason's lyric.
So what did you love?
For me, one of the scenes, I mean, it was so much fun to shoot all of them, and if you guys go on my Instagram, you will see I show a lot of behind the scenes. Like, all of it was so much fun. One of the scene that you was in, the stoning with Mary Magdalene, that was a dope scene to shoot. The Nights Over Egypt scene, that when they go to the club, because why not? You tell me they didn't go to the club. Like, people say to me, you know, and they're smoking weed in your film. Firstly, they're smoking Lengen weed. That's my own brand of biblical. Secondly, from the beginning of time, people smoked, and none of this stuff is new, right? None of this stuff is new. We jump into the Bible days. They had faces on the coins, right? They had shekels. They would, you know, none of this stuff is new. So, I think shooting the scene with Benedict Cumberbatch when he turns into White Jesus, I call him Weezus.
I need you to please break that down.
That just was funny, man. And it's funny because there's a singer from England called Laura Mvula. She plays the lady that owns the hair salon. Oh, look at him. So white. So trustworthy. But there's a bit, I wanted to keep it in there, but just time. When Benedict's leaving, when he's leaving this hair salon, he trips, right? Not in the film, but in real life, like he tripped over. And Laura was like, be careful, Jesus. Like, the whole thing was just so much fun. All the scenes with Elijah and Clarence, like those two, RJ, Kyler, and Lakeith Stanfield, they were really awesome to...
Oh, Barabbas too. Such
an awesome shoot, Barabbas. And what that scene was is, you know, he's like, look at him running towards me. I'm fearing for my life. Basically, it's just police brutality. But when we think about it, the Romans were, Rome was not a country those days. Rome was an empire. They were like the hugest colonizers. When you think of Antony and Cleopatra, what the hell was Antony doing anywhere near Cleopatra? They were huge colonizers. So all the things that go on today were going on then with anyone that wasn't Roman, right? It wasn't like just Romans and people of darker. It was just anyone that wasn't Roman. They were, you know, colonizing the whole planet. So they were all James McAvoy's Pontius Pilate, like Clarence walking on water. And it's a crazy thing when you're writing all of this stuff, and I'm writing it in West London, Kilburn Lane. And you're writing all of this stuff, and your brain's like, okay, what's this going to be like shooting? And you blink, right? And you're on set, and you're shooting all of these crazy scenes. So they're all kind of like amazing to shoot.
Yeah.
But Poppy, you can tell us what your scene was like for you to shoot.
Oh, just all of a sudden, I'm in Italy throwing stones at Tiana Taylor. It's just really weird. But just like I said, just an enjoyable experience in being able to, you've got your lines, you do a take, and then James saying, well, just play now, just ad lib, and doing some jokes about the donkey, you know. That's what made it fun, and that's what made it... good to watch, I guess, being a part of.
You were awesome, man. Like, people always ask about, who's that girl? Like, her face is just so biblical. Like, your biblical face was just so biblical in that
Jerome, and that's why I was telling you, you and your husband in the scene, Jerome.
Jerome, yeah.
To just play, just play with it. When Jesus was like, and you deem this a sin? And you're like, yes, she sexes the Romans. Like, when I was writing it, you and I didn't know each other, right? But when I cast and I saw Hopi's read, I was like, that is the face that was in my head. That is the face. And the thing is, when you smile, your whole face changes. But when you're serious, it's like, it's scary. Yeah, like it's scary. And then you guys just move your robes. And the stones. It's really like mad fun to shoot.
Amazing. I really loved it. I like how you also reference, sort of point out little things that happen, like racial profiling, just pointing out it happening back then and still happening, you know. I like that part. I really like how this story could literally be in the Bible, because it's literally a journey of a guy who didn't believe in God and who finds faith. Like, it's like a parable that we just may not be aware of, and that exists. That's how I saw the movie. So I feel like if you're not really a Christian or a Muslim, or you're not particularly religious, you will see this movie and go, this is really enlightening. And I'm quite interested in this religion. Like, it was just a really beautiful movie for me. Let me see. What was I going to ask? Do you have any questions to ask?
How easy is it to put on a movie like this? You know, when you're pitching something like this, which can, I guess, ruffle a few feathers, getting black people and messing around with religion and imagery putting out there. I don't know how much you can say, but like, I'm just thinking, God, how difficult was that?
You know, it's an interesting thing because, okay, like the harder they fall, right, took me, you remember, I'm not like from the industry, I'm from Kilburn Lane, Harrow Road, right? Mozart Estate. And so the harder they fall took me like 15 years to shoot. To get made, 15 years. And I put everyone together. I put Idris Elba, Jay-Z, Ted Sarandos, Netflix, Lawrence Bender, who produced Pulp Fiction. It took me 15 years to get that made. When I started trying to get The Harder They Fall made, Netflix wasn't even a streaming site. They didn't make me. Netflix wasn't a website. Netflix was they send DVDs to your house. It was a DVD rental company. When I wrote The Harder They Fall. And the irony with that is I would rent out so many films and not give them back. You know, you had to send them back. I just changed my details and rent out more and keep the DVDs. Next minute, I made a film for 90 million. They gave me 90 million to make a film. So that's kind of like a great hustle. But after the success of The Harder They Fall, because it's a huge film, it was much easier to... I didn't really have to pitch the Book of Clarence. I just sent the script out there. Okay, this is the next one I'm doing. But all the studios ran off except Legendary, who made Dune, and the Legendary stayed. Was like, okay, we'll make this movie. All the other studios ran off, but I didn't have to engage with anyone. It wasn't like sitting people down and convincing them, right? I think when you are doing something singular, it's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be difficult to kind of get made. It's always going to be difficult to convey your idea. Whatever you're doing, if it's different and unique, it's singular. But as hard as it is, that's what you're going to be known for. If you just listen to yourself and you obey your crazy, all of those ideas that are in your head, right? I always tell people, none of them are dreams. Dreams is a really poisonous word for us to take on, right? It's a really poisonous word. Dreams is a good thing if you're sleeping, but it's already hard for us. One, whether you're white, black, Indian, Chinese, if you come from the UK, man, you basically, you travel, you're elsewhere. The UK is elsewhere, so it's already harder for you. Then the last thing you want to do is put the word dreams on it. Like my dream house, my dream car, my dream job, my dream girl, my dream guy, my dream, you... Say dream, they're your aims, they're your plans, they're your intentions. So when I write something, I'm going to make it. I'll take a million trips on the airplane to get it done. And I ignore all the people telling me no. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here, you know, today. So you're always going to do that. As soon as you do something singular, let me just finish the point. But if you listen to yourself, right, and you obey your crazy, when people tell you you're nuts, it's good being nuts. Who wants to be sane, right? Charlie Chaplin, let me just... break this down.
We have only 5 minutes left.
I'll be as quick as possible.
We need Q&A.
I'll be as quick as possible. Charlie Chaplin, the original gangster. This dude was a star of the silent movie. He was a star of the silent movie, right? Then the whole McCarthyism happened and he was blacklisted from Hollywood. Then they made talkies. And talkies, the advent of talkies, killed all the silent movie stars, right? Killed all their careers. Charlie Chaplin came back in the days of the talkies. Firstly, he formed United Artists Studios. Him, Douglas Fairbanks, and Mary Pickford formed their own studio. Then he gave us the movie The Great Dictator, which has the greatest speech known to man. If you Google greatest speech in cinema, it'll be Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator. How could the silent movie, biggest silent movie star of all time, come back in talkies and give us the greatest speech of all time? That's how much of a gangster he was. So you have to be singular and you'll be remembered for it. You know what I mean?
Amazing.
The audacity of swag.
Amazing. So what we're going to do now is we're going to play the clip that this 14-year-old talented boy made. And this was like an amazing promo that we did for this particular event, which caught Mr. James Samuel's attention, which allowed him to come. So we're going to play that.
Hollywood has never given us a film like this, ever.
And what is it that I'm frightened of?
Us. Hallelujah. Us, who are truly unconquerable. Us, who refuse to be defeated. Us, who cradle this world with joy.
We have never had anything where you can find us reflected in those days until
now. I'm a god, so when you see me say
hallelujah. Amazing. Oh, that's it.
Thank you, G. My god.
Now, we probably have maybe one or two questions, so who has a question? All right, I've got a question here.
Hiya. First of all, absolutely amazing to everybody. James, that was amazing. My question's for you, Hoppy. Nice to finally meet you in person. Basically, because I'm an actor as well, but what was the process like of getting the size and all the way to filming and like being on set? What was that whole process like, if you didn't mind?
It was a really busy year that year, which was great. I was in Jordan shooting something else. A tape came in. My friend Hamza here read for me. And it was just intense, wasn't it? So we're trying to get it done before work the next day, which I think helped because I didn't overthink it. Sometimes when I got too much time, I overthink it. I don't hear anything. But then I booked it, finished the job in Jordan, and then suddenly I'm going to Italy. And then with Michael Ward and going out for dinner and just this mad, mad experience. But yeah, from sides, it was about a month and a half from getting the sides to working. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other question?
Again, congratulations. Congratulations on a great movie. I really enjoyed it, actually.
Thank you, bro.
I didn't know what it was going to be about. I didn't do any reading before it, so yeah, it was really interesting to see. My question was around, obviously, there was a lot of emotion in this movie. There was a lot of comedy as well. So I was wondering what it was like when you were writing that, finding that balance to not make it too much of a comedy or add the aspects in. So I'd be really intrigued.
You know, it's a really interesting thing. And thank you for that question, my brother. What's your name?
Ethan.
Ethan. Good name.
Thank you.
You know, for me, I didn't actually... wasn't even looking at the balance, really. I was just writing it as life is, right? I come from the hood. The hood is pure unadulterated comedy and pure unadulterated drama, right? It's the craziest thing, and it's mad music. So you'll be chilling with your friends like on the wall opposite Mozart State, right? We'll be jamming and cracking mad jokes. And then next minute, someone's shot. Or the police will come by and you've got problems with that particular police officer and you haven't even done anything. They're just giving you mad drama. You're laying on the floor with dogs and they're telling you, oh, you fit the description of da, da, da. Like, all of those things are real. You know the chariot race in the beginning? That whole entire thing was real. It was BMX. We was on BMXs. And one day in Latimer, we went to race around the track and the travellers were there. Those days we used to say gypsies, right? The Irish travellers was there. And every time we took the bend, we had... Like, what's that? My friend Patrick took the turn and they darted him up and jumped on him and robbed him. And we went crazy and went over there and a kid came out amongst all these gangs. He was like 10 years old. And he was like, what clothes? We didn't take anything. Patrick said, that's, you're wearing it. That's my top. He went, if I was you, I'll go home. I'd be thankful it's just your clothes and your bike we took. Yo, we better take this L or 150 travelers are going to kill us. We just had to ride home and take that L that day. But all of those things are real, real things. The pain of getting robbed, but the laughter of it being a 10-year-old. And the, like, it's, you know, so really it's kind of like real life. And I think for anyone growing up in a hood, any color, right, growing up in a hood in urban environments, from day to day, you experience non-stop comedy, non-stop drama, and non-stop music. I'm going to be really super quick with this thing. A guy was walking past my house, right, walking past my mum's house, and he had a guitar on his back. And usually, if it's a bass guitar, it's a longer case. If it's an electric guitar, it's a thinner case. If it's an acoustic guitar, it's a bigger case. And this guy, there's like 12 goons outside my mum's house. We were goons them days. And this guy was walking past, and usually white folks, when they walk past my mum's house, they see all them goons outside. You know, black people always look double. 12 is 24, right, when it gets reported to the police. They cross, and then they walk, and then they cross back and go to the station. This guy was walking, and he looked at us, and he just... True story. I said to him, excuse me, brother, what guitar's that in your case? What guitar's that? And he said, he looked at me and he done this. Whoa! That's a bit rude. But I'm young. Well, that's a bit rude. Before I batter you on your own instrument. And this guy went, what did you say? White guy, long hair. I went, before I batter you on your own instrument. He came back and went, come on then. And he took off his guitar. And he opened it outside my mum's house. I looked at my friends and I was like, oh, looks like we have a throwdown. And he took up the guitar and he put it on his back. And he started performing. Ding, 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 ding. And he started performing Peggy Sue, like a Buddy Holly track. I love you, my Peggy Sue. He wouldn't even think I know Peggy Sue. And he finished and he gave me the guitar. And I took it and I told him, you should know, brother, I don't do covers. The guitar's all right. I gave it to him and I got my Gibson J200 12 string from upstairs. I brought that guitar back down and I wiped the floor with that individual to the point where I still know him up to today. His name's Alex. He was, oh my God, you're amazing. And now that was a day of drama, comedy, almost violence, music. It's just the hood. And when you pay attention to those things, you kind of get the Book of Clarence. If you're not familiar with those environments, you might go, oh, well, it's tonally, but it's not. Like, that's life. One minute, you're laughing with your friends, and the next minute, you're just carrying the burden, man, of a crucifix on the steps, just trying to get something done that you can't because you're black. Do you know what I mean, Ethan? I hope that answers your question, bro.
I have a question. Any other question? Okay, so I'm going to ask
quick with
Oliver.
This answer.
So Oliver is a stage actor and also a film actor. There are a couple of actors here, and I'd like to know, is there a process or a difference in, because obviously I'm not an actor, but like, how do you approach roles when there's like on stage and when it's on film? Like, how do you?
I mean, it depends really. In the end, I think you're just trying to find the truth, right? Depending on the world and the stakes, whatever, you do what you can to try and to be in the moment and do your prep, but be ready to play on the day or play on stage. I think where I'm at right now is trying to find the flow state, and that's like being prepared, doing everything you can, but how can you be in flow state? And for TV and film, then sometimes that's up to the power of the director and you've got other things to capture just a moment. And I think on stage you want to try and make it live and with an audience, but I think there's a magic moment of play. And I guess that's why you're trying to get people to improvise sometimes. They might get an essence or something, but some things you just have to get in the moment with the combination of people and the vision. So trying to play, trying to be childlike. And if it's something like emotional or intense, you know, you don't want to take it home with you. So you do everything you can to be prepared and be in the moment. But try and be honest, try and be truthful. Amazing. Yeah.
referring to the humor in the film, I felt like, because you're Nigerian, there's a bit of Nigerian humor in there. Yeah. There was a guy with the idiot guard that's like, idiots, get out. Very Nigerian. Like, yeah, there's a couple of things in there that's just like little Easter eggs. One last question and we are done. Thank you all so much.
Hi, thank you. I really enjoyed the movie.
Thank you.
I would like to know, what's the inspiration for the title?
Well, for me, I wanted to have, first it was like finding Clarence's name, right? I wanted to name him something, but I didn't want it like a biblical name. One of my friends said, I know you wanted like one of those old American names. There's two syllables, but pronounced one, Clarence. As opposed to like the Book of Ezekiel or the Book of, I wanted it like a name that we can all, you know, relate to. That's not biblical, but call it the Book of something, like a book. Because you know, the Bible is just a collection of books that someone who was human decided to compile, and other books that they had at that time didn't get in. They found the Gospel of Thomas. It was like a collection of Gospels, right? They found the Gospel of Thomas in 1948, I think. But they didn't, it was, you know, it's not admissible. So I wanted this almost like the story of an everyman, right? But to have it its own book, kind of. But also, I think it was important for me. I love those Bible movies, those Bible epics that we grew up on, but I never related to the people in them. I've never even met a white person that looks like Charlton Heston. And as much as I love Yul Brynner, so it was written, so let it be done. I love Yul Brynner, but he should not be playing the Pharaoh of Egypt, right? Like, what the hell? And I love Yul Brynner, but Yul Brynner's, ain't he Eastern European? So I wanted to kind of like give us today, everyone that's alive, say our own book and our own thing. So it had to be called the Book of something. When I found his name, it was the Book of Clarence.
Amazing. Now, it's a wrap, everyone. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
This has been amazing. Thank you all to the panelists. Please, let's give a round of applause to the panelists. Oliver, thank you very much.
Thank you.
James, thank you very much. And Hoppy, thank you very much. And
you guys in the building.
Yes. Thank you all for coming.